There are a lot of places out there. There's actually a bunch of them. If you Google it, you can find places that'll do it for you for about $80, but they'll falsify income documentation for you so that you can give it to a landlord and get in a property even though you make no income.
All right, everybody, welcome back to another episode. I am your host, Spencer Sutton. And Matthew's not with us today, but that's okay. We have another team member here and somebody that is going to shed a lot of light on our leasing practices. We have our Detroit team leader, Jacob West. And in addition to that title, he is still the acting director of our leasing department. So Jacob West, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me. Glad to be part of it.
Yeah, good. Well, I think you're going to be a great guest. I know we're going to have you on some other podcasts as well, just because you're a wealth of information. Jacob's been with us for right at 4 years. He told me in 2 weeks, it'll be 4 years. He started out in our accounting department. He has been in accounting. He has been in leasing. He has been in property management. And now he's a team leader in one of our newest markets in Detroit. But the reason I wanted to bring him on is because last week in last week's podcast episode, I was talking about how hiring a property manager can actually help you make more money by allowing a property manager to focus on low return activities and you focus on high return activities. And so I thought, hey, this would be a great opportunity to bring somebody in to the conversation who has really had a lot to do with how we lease houses. And so what I want to do is provide you all with a ton of value, a ton of content that is going to help you probably better lease houses. As you build rental portfolios, I kind of want to give you a bird's eye view or a sneak peek into how we do it. Jacob's had his hand in a lot of that over the past year, and we have put a ton of focus on leasing houses. So Jacob, why don't you kind of tell us a little bit about your journey at Evernest? I know I mentioned a little bit of it, and then what you've been doing specifically in the leasing department for us.
Yeah. So like you mentioned, I've done a little bit of everything before coming to Detroit, obviously focusing on the leasing department. But the two things that I did before that were work with acquisitions. The last, I guess, normal job I had at Evernest before that acquisition thing started with Atlanta was Birmingham leasing. I suppose you could say that planted the seed for wanting to put some focus on the leasing department in general. Spent about 60 days in Birmingham leasing, in the trenches, doing the boots on the ground role, you know, having my phone ring off the hook all day, every day, live it and see, you know, what's wrong? What do we need to fix first? Yeah. What can we improve? That kind of started our initiative. That was in late 2019. And then 2020, after the Atlanta market had kind of calmed down and I was able to get out of there, that was when my focus really turned to leasing. So that was what we spent most of 2020 doing, especially early 2020, kind of the pre-COVID and early COVID time, was a lot of process improvements, a lot of trying out new systems, softwares, communication methods, organizational methods, division of work, all those kind of things, very experimental. And then kind of by summer of 2020 is when we really started firing on all cylinders with some of the stuff that we worked on.
Yeah, I think one of the issues for us as we began to scale and as we began to grow is just how do we have a better system for leasing properties that's going to give our owners a lot of value, right? So if we're telling them, hey, we're experts, we lease thousands and thousands of properties, you need to come to us, then we need to be able to back that up and provide them an excellent service. And so up until that point, we had been doing an okay job. But like Jacob said, there were a lot of holes in our processes. There were a lot of things that were not necessarily working out great. So why don't we start out? So Jacob started focusing on this at the end of 2019. And I just want to give you just some stats on how well we've been able to do. So 2020, which we know was the year of COVID. So think about that. 2020, year of COVID, everybody's nervous about leasing properties because everybody's worried about layoffs, just all kinds of things going on with the market. Tell us, how many houses did we lease in 2020?
865.
Okay. So we leased 865. And what was the average days on market?
Average days on market was 28.3 across all locations.
Okay, across all locations. So that's going to take into effect Birmingham. It's going to take Atlanta. It's going to take all of our Colorado market. All of these markets, we're combining them. And so the average was around 28 days, which I've been here quite a while. That's probably the lowest days on market that I've seen on an average for, you know, on an annual basis. So what are like some of the specifics that we tightened up? Now, I know you mentioned communication. How did we tighten up communication?
A lot of it was organizational. Our leasing system pre-2020 was really built to allow one person to handle the absolute maximum lead volume possible and to try and, you know, automate our way into that. And that was when we built this system, it was built for someone, you know, in the Birmingham office to do that.
Right.
We have kind of shifted away from that. And what we're trying to do is unautomate some things, staff up, and then really make sure that someone is owning each property. Each property has a leasing agent assigned to it. It's not, one person trying to, you know, send out a bunch of workflow emails to a bulk list of 1,000 people from different locations. We wanted to get better organized, have someone owning each property. We wanted to automate the right things and unautomate the right things. So we had a lot of automations in place. They were not always in the best places. We were probably wasting our time automating some things, you know, kind of having to pick up the pieces on the back end if it,
right,
you know, when we realized that our hit rate's not very good. We were doing a lot of automated emailing, which we found hit rate was super low on.
Right.
So we've started trying to automate the right things at the right time. So sending a lot of automated text messages, sending them right before showings or right after showings, kind of focusing in on the right times to send those batch communications. And then on the back end, staffing up so that we don't rely on automation. It's a great supplement, but we want to personally reach out to and talk to every single person who's interested. If they are serious enough to sign up for a showing, we need to talk to them.
Yeah, I think this is one of the biggest changes that we have seen is just in the communication department. I mean, for so long, we were not communicating well, I would say. We had so much lead volume that we couldn't handle it all, right? So if there was a complaint, it was that, hey, I wanted to see this house or I wanted to, you know, and they were just too busy to get to me. And so now staffing up in that regards is huge. And just for all of you, you may be wondering, well, why do you need to automate certain things? Why do you need to have so much staff? Well, because when we market a property for an owner, we're going to get significantly more volume for that and eyes on that property than a typical landlord who is posting something to rent. And that is because, I mean, just imagine we get thousands upon thousands of hits to our website each month. And a vast majority of that are prospective tenants looking for property. So they know in each city, they're going to find property managers who are reliable. There are residents out there that will not lease from an individual landlord. They want to deal with a firm that's been out there and maybe they're going to go and look at reviews and see, hey, how well does this company treat their tenants? So we have a massive amount of volume, a ton of eyeballs looking at our properties. And so we have to have all these systems and things in place. So let's get into some things that I think will be really interesting to our listeners. I want to know, because last week I told the story of I used to rent my own properties back when I was wholesaling houses. I rented my own properties. And I mean, I had a few decent, you know, leases that I wrote up, but there was one that was like a nightmare that's when I turned my properties over to Matthew and Evernest back in 2008/9. And I was like, I'm done with this. I'm not going to do this. It was like 7 months of non-payment. And so I turned it over. So what are some of the mistakes that we see people make when they're leasing properties, like just a typical landlord?
Probably the biggest one that I would say would be a lack of a screening process or a very basic screening process. So,
yeah.
And I've, you know, kind of experienced the same thing on the tenant side, being a tenant who's renting from a landlord who doesn't use a property manager. They should not have rented that house to me. With the information really? That I gave them. No way. They, you know, we didn't do a credit check. They didn't ask for any documentation of my income beyond just telling them who my employer was. We reported
this is during
income.
This is during COVID.
Yeah. Oh yeah. Yeah. We self-reported income, filled out a one page for both my wife and I, one front page of information. And I don't believe they called either of our employers. At least neither of our employers said they got a call.
Right.
So I could have been anyone with any level of income. You know, I guess we appeared pretty put together when we did the showing, but
a lot of people can do that.
A lot of people can do that. And I don't think that, all of them are quite so, you know, lacking there, but you know, there are definitely a lot of ways in which our underwriting process is a lot more sophisticated. We find out more about residents than the average landlord, and in a lot of cases, the average property manager.
Yeah, I want to come back to that because I think that's important. The first thing I do want to say, and Jacob brings up a great point, and that's that, you know, I know when I was leasing my own properties, the temptation is to slack on the screening process and to say, hey, you start getting nervous. What if your house has been on the market for 20 days, 30 days, and you're like, oh my goodness, I've got to get this thing leased. I want to get it leased as quick as possible. So what you do is you start cutting corners. You make exceptions. You say, you know what? We don't need to verify this guy's income. He looks good. They're trustworthy. They seem like trustworthy people. All of this junk that, you know what, you can't do, because whether you own one rental property or whether you own 100, you are in business. Like, this is a business, and that rental house is a business, and the tenant is the asset. That's what I mentioned last week. The tenant is the asset. So you have to get that right, or else it's going to be a very bad investment for you over the next 12 months. So let's kind of segue that into, how do we screen? What is a screening criteria that we would use, Jacob, on any one of our houses?
Yeah, so I'll try and be fairly brief because we do have a fairly sophisticated underwriting process that we've developed over the years. A lot of what we're looking for is the same information that a lot of big property managers are looking for. You know, we look at rental history. We look at their ability to pay, so income, employment, all those things. Their credit score, we actually use the TransUnion product, the resident score. Mm-hmm. It's a landlord-specific product, and criminal history. So we look at all those things that everybody looks at. Maybe where I would say that we're going above and beyond is how we verify all those things.
Okay.
So credit scoring, pretty darn straightforward. You get the credit score, and it is what it is. You know, you can trust TransUnion to provide you accurate data. But, you know, other parts of it, like income, that's not as easy to verify. There are a lot of places out there. There's actually a bunch of them. If you Google it, you can find places that'll do it for you for about $80. But they'll falsify income documentation for you so that you can give it to a landlord and get in a property even though you make no income.
Wait, hold on. So you're saying a tenant, if they wanted to, could cheat the system? Because
Correct.
There are companies out there that will falsify their income?
Correct. Yes. They'll provide you with all kinds of fake documents, bank statements, W-2s, you know, whatever you request, they'll provide it. And that's getting worse, you know, with the proliferation of technology.
Sure.
With COVID hitting, a lot of people being out of work. It's really quite the epidemic. It's one of the key things that we use to verify that is application processor called FindDigs, which allows us to directly link with the applicant's bank account so that we can exactly verify what they're paid, when, and by whom. Essentially fraud-proof, unless somebody, the only way you could defraud that system would be is if you have completely stolen someone else's identity.
Right. Gotcha.
Because, you know, we've got identification, social security number, their bank account, their pay stubs. We've called their, and we're calling their employer, verifying they still work right there, how many hours they work, what they're making. You know, you would have had to do a really good job stealing someone's identity to hit all those check boxes. So it would be near impossible, if not impossible.
So you're saying that FindDigs, and FindDigs is a, like, the prospective tenant knows what we're doing by verifying
Correct.
All of this,
Correct.
Right? So it's
yes.
totally above board.
It's basically, instead of using some other software platform for a tenant to fill out their application form online, it's another form of that, but they consent to the bank link. It uses, I believe they use Plaid, if I'm not mistaken, as the interface, but it's the same sort of completely secured, encrypted interface as someone would use to do those personal finance helper tools that I believe Quicken offers one.
Gotcha. Okay.
So things like that, anything you've used, you know, to connect your bank to online, it's the same sort of encrypted system that they're all using.
Gotcha. Awesome. I mean, one of the things that we're doing above and beyond, very sophisticated, that is verifying this income and what they say they're doing.
Correct. Yes.
I know during COVID, we were actually calling employers.
Yeah, we're still doing. Yeah, that's not going away. Too many people lose their jobs for that to go away, and it is labor intensive. It's super labor intensive. The employment verification stage easily takes the longest out of any step of this whole process. But we're making time for that because it's important. And we've got systems in place that allow us to automate all the other steps so that we can spend time doing things like that. We're not doing any data entry anymore. We're not having to send things to TransUnion. All these things are automated so that the only thing we've got to do is review the information. So, you know, we've got our team who's, you know, bought in and invested to the success of that tenant in our property, reviewing the information, ensuring they meet all the qualifications. And then the manual digging is on the employment verification side. So it allows us to spend that time because it is worth it.
Right. Yeah, it is worth it. Most definitely. I mean, this is this is the most important thing you as a landlord are ever going to do is find a great tenant and put them in that house. You know, so much focus for real estate investors is on buying the house at the right price and all that. And that is important, but my goodness, if you can put a tenant in your home and keep them for 5, 6, 7 years and they pay every month on time, it's going to improve your investment. It's going to be a great experience for you. Let's just say that. So talk to me, Jacob, about some scams that our landlords can avoid. We've seen different scams. I know because I get messages like they come across on Slack within our team, but talk about some of the things that we're seeing out there right now that landlords need to be aware of.
Yeah. So I talked a little bit about people providing fake documents. That's not necessarily new, but it's really kicked into a new gear with the application side. We've seen people go as far as to falsify a somewhat verifiable employment situation for themselves. We've seen people create websites, and if you click around the website a little bit, you'll start seeing that, you know, only the front page is fully built out. You know, maybe there's some example text or pictures in there. You know, maybe it's
some filler text.
It's supposedly a law firm, and then they've got, you know, a shop section where you can add shoes and TVs and things to your cart. You know, people will go that far. You know, they'll give their employer's contact information as their friend and they'll do that. And the only way to check all of it and to be sure about it is to check every piece and to use them all as cross checks and really reconcile, okay, employment, here's the employer. We can find them on Google. They really exist. This is a real business. Here's the employee's manager. Do they exist? Are they on LinkedIn? Can I find them? And then cross-reference that with the income that we're seeing come into the bank and with the pay stubs. And if all three of those check out, we can verify it. Yeah. If all three of them don't check out, then we've got a problem. The employment stuff is and the fake websites, those are always super fun to look at. Usually, if you point that out to the applicant, they just kind of stop talking to you.
Right. Yeah, they disappear.
The jig's up. They're gone. So we'll see that. There's a lot of people out there who are putting up fake listings. Mm-hmm. So not the applicants themselves trying to scam the landlord. People out there oftentimes doing this from other countries, as we've seen, but they're using a web-based phone number that they can change kind of at their leisure and putting up a fake listing on Craigslist or Facebook using all the photos from a legitimate landlord's rental. Even if you watermark it, it doesn't matter. They'll use that and just say, yeah, I'm so-and-so. It's a little harder to get away with that when you say I'm Evernest. You can Google Evernest and the number's not going to match up.
And
if you call our number, that's not who you're going to get. So, but people do it. What's more common is people saying that they're the owner. Say, oh yeah, that's my property manager, but you could talk directly to me.
Gotcha.
So we will see that occasionally.
What are they hoping to do? They're hoping to get somebody in that property and essentially take a security deposit and take first month's rent.
Yeah. And they actually really don't care if someone gets in the property.
Okay, gotcha.
A lot of times, you know, that's more of a side effect for them. They don't care what happens to the property. They don't care if that person burns it down. It's not their property. They don't live in the city.
Right.
They may not live in the country. It's a form of wire fraud. They're trying to get someone to wire the money. Some people will do it actual wires. Some people will do Venmo, Cash App, you know, credit card payments, could be anything. But they're trying to get the deposit or a first month's rent or whatever they can convince the applicant is needed to secure the house. Sometimes they are successful in getting someone into a house. We use Rently lockboxes. So we have had people who have done a legitimate showing through a Rently lockbox and sent the wrong guy the money because that's where they saw the ad first. So their bias is that, oh, well, I saw it on Craigslist first. I'm going to send this person the money. We've had that happen before, but that's definitely something that if you're putting listings out online, there are scammers out there who are just waiting on listings to pop up and then duplicating them to try.
How can landlords protect against this?
So the best way to protect against it is to be as easy to find as possible, which is what we focus a lot of our effort on. It needs to be very easy for someone to determine who the right landlord is, because you know what's unfortunate about Facebook especially is that Facebook actually doesn't allow you to put the address on their listings. They say for security reasons, but what that really means is that it's impossible for me to search for fake listing. And on Craigslist, they don't necessarily have to put the address on it either if they don't want to. Finding the listings and preventing them from ever reaching a prospective tenant is nearly impossible. So you need to make sure that they can find who you are, that it's really hard to mistake anyone else for you. You know, we put a bunch of flyers up at the houses telling people what to do and not do. And the benefit is that these scammers are predominantly, at least from what we've seen, they're predominantly virtual. So by being there, by putting your marketing materials, your flyers all over the place, you are usually able to kind of circumvent the scammers. Yeah. Because if someone goes to a house with instructions from a scammer saying, all right, when you're done with the showing, you call me, pay me, and you can take the key home. This place is yours. If they get to the house and there's a sign right next to the lockbox that says, do not remove this key when you leave. If someone is telling you to take this key with you, they are trying to steal your money. We get a lot of people who call us after they see that and say, hey, I just saw this thing and this guy wanted me to send him this money.
Right. Right. So we have this.
It doesn't seem right. And we're like, yeah, that's not right. Please send us that listing because we need to flag that.
We put that outside by the lockbox, but we also put it inside the home with flyers, like on the counter.
Yeah, we got a couple different ones, you know, that say different things. You know, the one next to the lockbox is going to, you know, we don't put them outside because we don't want them to blow away or anything. We put them on the door just inside of the lockbox.
Gotcha.
Yep. So that they see it as they leave and you can't miss it. So if you're turning the door handle to leave, you're going to read it.
Yep.
And we've got a couple different ones to say different things. The text is like this tall so they can't miss it. It's all about making the right way as obvious as possible, because the wrong way is going to be out there. Yep. The scammers are literally just waiting for ads to pop up and duplicating them.
Yep.
And it's easy to do. Everybody's listing online, you know.
Everybody wants to list online, right?
Yeah,
it's an easy way to get stuff out there.
Forgo those leads, right? You can't.
Yeah. Yeah. But you also, I mean, also having your number prominently displayed on a yard sign would be very helpful. Yes. So if they say, well, there's a discrepancy in the phone number I called and this number here that says call me at, you know, if you want to see this property. So that's another good
identifying yourself on yard signs.
Yep.
Always watermark your photos. It doesn't totally prevent it, but you know, if the right person's name is staring them in the face on the wrong person's ad, it's going to make it less convincing.
Yeah, sure. And I would imagine scammers, there's plenty of them that aren't watermarked that they can get to, that's going to be the lower hanging fruit. So if you watermark yours, it may be somewhat of a deterrent.
Correct. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, good. Anything else that we can share with the landlords out there, people who are interested in building rental portfolios, Jacob, that you think would be helpful? I think, you know, we've given them some great information, our screening criteria, technology we use, talked about different scams, mistakes people are making. Anything else?
Well, we talked a lot about some negative things, but on the positive side, one thing we mentioned using our Rently system to do showings, it is a huge benefit to do. It is there are other risks that happen when you use a self-touring mechanism like Rently. It is technically possible for someone to move in illegitimately, whereas if you're doing agent showing only, you know, they'd have to break in to do that. So that's less likely, but it allows you to do so many showings. The worst thing that can happen and the most unsafe thing that can happen to your rental property is for it to sit for too long. You know, properties that are vacant for too long attract that kind of problem. Maybe it's not a scammer. Maybe it's someone breaking in and vandalizing the home. It could be anything. The key is getting that house leased as quickly as possible. The key to getting it leased as quickly as possible is doing as many showings as possible.
That's right.
It is all about getting people in the house. You can write the best description on the planet. Your photos can be professional and touched up and beautiful. But what they care about is, okay, nothing in the photos turns me off. I like what this house looks like in general. I like the stats. I can see square footage, beds and baths. That's all good with me. I like the area. I like the price. They got to go see it in order to sign a lease. Almost everybody in the single family game is going to do that because it's not like an apartment. It's not a standardized product.
Right.
You know, units 1 through 200 are not the same. So no one is going to go, you know, and there's no sample unit for them to tour anyways.
Right.
So that's they're going to have to put eyes on it in most cases. We do lease, you know, houses relatively frequently before, you know, before people tour them, but it's got to be priced high and that person's got to be very sure.
That's not the best way to do it, right? The best way is not to lease a property without them walking that property, because the worst thing that can happen is they can sign a lease, go in there and say, oh, well, I didn't realize this was this way or this was this way. I don't want to rent this. And you're like, I'm sorry. Like, you've already signed a lease.
Yeah, you don't want to have that conflict for sure. But definitely the amount of showings you can do is as quickly as possible is better.
Yeah.
And to be honest, if you're not getting at least 5 showings a week on your property right now, anyways, you know, maybe in January, I'd say something different, but probably be more like 3 in January. But, you know, our rule of thumb is 5 plus most of the time. Honestly, the market's pretty hot right now. I'd start getting a little worried if you weren't getting closer to 10. And if you're out there doing these showings yourself and you've got, let's say, 3 properties on the market in a small portfolio.
It's rough.
I mean, yeah, I mean, like, you're looking at, okay, best case, I've got to go out to each of these 3 properties 10 times this week for, you know, let's say half an hour a piece. And you'd be happy to get that. You're not going to be happy when you're done doing all those showings, though.
Yeah, that's right. You
know, that's brutal. So definitely utilizing something like Rently, it's a low return activity. You're there to unlock the door for them. If you think that you being there is the only thing that's going to sell them on the property, that's probably not the case. And if it is the case, you're a real good salesman, or that property's got some problems.
Listen, we've been doing it for 6 years. We've been using Rently for about 6 years. We've only had a handful of incidences where something went wrong with a Rently, like a handful in thousands and, and thousands and thousands of properties on the market. We've had a handful, like maybe 5, where somebody's gone in and stolen something or whatever. It just doesn't happen all that often. There's safeguards there with Rently. So I agree with Jacob. That's a low return activity. You going and opening the door is a very low return activity for you. So find a way to automate it. That's definitely one of the ones that we were a little nervous about, because when we started it, we were only in Birmingham. We're like, hey, is this going to work? But it works. And it works everywhere we are. Like, in all 11 or 12 markets that we're in, it absolutely works.
And it's not just us using Rently either. So people will become Rently users, and that's their new way to find homes, because they know they can go tour as many as possible when they need to move. So, you know, people will see ours. They'll see multiple of ours in a lot of cases. Maybe they'll see somebody else's too. But once they do Rently one time, they're going to love it. Like, no one, you know, sometimes we've got to really hold people's hands to get them signed up and to know how to schedule showings. You know, sometimes people, especially who are old school, maybe a little older, but they start using it, and next thing you know, a week later, that person's toured a dozen homes in Birmingham.
Yeah.
If they've toured a dozen of our houses, as long as they're qualified, we're going to rent them something.
That's right. Yep.
It's very sticky in that way.
Yeah, it's very sticky.
That would be my best positive advice. Is use something like Rent. We like Rently because it's got some additional security measures versus some of the other ones. But, you know, lots of people use code boxes with good success. So there's a lot of providers out there. And the only other thing would be, the market's hot right now. Whatever repairs you got going, get them done and get that house on the market because they're leasing like crazy.
And that's what I was going to say. To Jacob's point where he said you should be showing your house 5 to 10 times a week, if you're not, then you either have a pricing problem or you have a problem with the product, right? So people are somehow they're not finding it, like they see it and they're not attracted to it, so they're not going to see it. So find out what it is. Are you being over, you know, optimistic with your price, or do you have some things you need to take care of at the house? If you're getting showings,
people when you do showings,
yeah,
you know, if that's you right. get people in, it's very important to survey them. We survey everybody automatically with Rently, but we also call and follow up. Sometimes people will be pretty brutally honest in surveys, and then sometimes they won't leave any survey feedback. We want to coax that out of them because yeah. it's important. You know, sometimes yeah, things
it's great feedback.
Yeah. I mean, sometimes things as simple as, oh, the neighbors have a big scary dog. They might not have had that dog when I went out there and put the sign out.
Yeah. Right.
Or they may keep him inside sometimes. And that's what I'm seeing. I'm seeing no scary dog. So I think it's sure. great. But applicants, they don't owe you anything. So they may not give you the best feedback right off the bat. But at the same time, they don't feel the need to be nice to you either. So yeah. if you coax it out of them, they'll often be very harsh critics.
Yeah, they'll be brutally honest.
In a constructive way.
Yeah, and that's what you want. All you want are the facts. That's all you care about. You want to hear from the market. The market, you are marketing something, and the market is trying to talk back to you, and that's what you're looking for, as much feedback as possible.
And get data as much. Yeah. You're showing
collect
data.
As much data as you can.
Your inquiry data. If you've got enough of that historically, like we do, I have a very good feel for how many showings, for instance, how many apps, how many inquiries, and all that, that leads to a house that will rent in under 21 days.
Yep.
And if the metrics are not looking like what they need to look like within the first 10 days, we know what to do.
Well, this has been great, Jacob. Thank you so much for your time. As you can tell, Jacob knows everything about our leasing department. He was a big part of us leasing over 800 properties last year in the middle of a pandemic. So, and I think we'll probably lease more this year. So big, big things in 2021. All right, everybody, that's another episode. That's a wrap. So leave us a review on iTunes if you haven't already. And we look forward to seeing you on the next episode.